Welcome to Sportsmen of Colorado, Colorado's premier outdoor radio show, heard every Saturday afternoon on KLZ 560, with insights on hunting, fishing, archery, guns, and ammo from Colorado's top outfitters, featuring the industry's leading experts on how to enhance your experience in the great outdoors. Now, here's your host, Scott Whatley.
Welcome to Sportsmen of Colorado. This is Kevin Flesh. I'm your host this week. Scott and Red are in Africa, and they are shooting up the place. Scott's been sending me pictures all week, and if you want to take a look at the different animals that Scott has been shooting, and Red as well, Red shot a beautiful zebra, I think yesterday or the day before. But take a look at our Facebook page, Sportsmen of Colorado, and Scott's been putting up all of the different animals that he's been shooting, and just spectacular. Africa is such an excellent resource. And it's amazing the facilities and everything else that Scott is saying with the new partnership that our sponsor has, Hunting Legends, and just an amazing spot to be in. And it's always fun to hear Scott and Red when they get back. So we'll be looking forward to them regaling us with all the stories next week. But we got a great show this week. All kinds of different fishing. All kinds of different discussions about what's going on in the state. I've got two special guests in studio today. My daughters, Kendall and Addie. How are you guys?
Great. Good.
Yeah, very nice. They haven't been in the studio before with me, so they're excited about that. They were taking selfies before the show to send off to their friends. So, but with that, we've got Austin Parr. Austin, are you with us?
I'm with you, Kevin. How are you?
I'm good, Austin. And I saw you earlier today. Because, of course, I was fishing a little bit the last couple of days and broke a fly rod, so I was stopping in your shop to have you help me with that. And, of course,
you guys... Get it taken care of.
Yes, you're doing a nice job with that, and hopefully I'll be back on the road with my four weight here very soon. But
absolutely.
But the weather's been kind of strange and all kinds of different water coming in. Let's talk a little bit about Chatfield and what's been going on over there and what you've been doing to get your clients on some fish.
Absolutely. Well, with the extra rain that we've been having on top of an already standard runoff, Chatfield has risen approximately about 10 feet right now. And that is basically pushing all your fish up shallow. You know, fish notoriously move with the water levels as you go up and down, so they are up in the trees right now.
So you've got walleyes and smallmouths that are up into those cottonwoods is what you're saying?
Walleyes and smallmouths in the cottonwoods. So we've been up in there pitching jigs, doing a lot of different plastics. I like tube jigs a lot up in those trees, and that's been definitely the most effective bait for us for sure. Catching a few fish on some slip bobbers here and there, but it's funny because it seems like we're really finding a concentration of fish, but they're not everywhere. So, I mean, all of a sudden you'll find some, hit three or four of them real quick, but then keep moving on, and you start to lose them again. So it's definitely taking a lot of cast.
So it's one of those situations where if folks are used to fishing Chatfield this time of year, and let's say they're normally fishing the mid-lake humps and they're expecting
yep.
fish to be out there, they're not there, are they?
Not at all. And, you know, we've been having customers come in the shop all week long talking about how they can't find those fish out there at all. And, you know, they're not there. They're simply not there. They're up in the trees. And it's a very similar situation that you would see at a Glendale or at a McConaughey when the water comes up high. The walleyes move up shallow, and a lot of people don't feel like they should be getting walleyes flipping jigs. But it's kind of interesting when you can do so.
All right. So this is also a good opportunity for folks to try that. It's a different presentation. So let's describe what you're doing to get into these areas and catch these fish.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm going with a little bit heavier rod. Typically, I'm throwing medium light, but I have stepped it up to a medium just to get a little bit of extra backbone if we get into a big fish, which we have been doing. We've gotten several really nice, solid fish. Not quite over 30, but close. But we are going with a 15-pound braid off of the rod right there, and then you're going to be going to a 10-pound fluorocarbon leader, something just enough to be able to get those fish up and out of there. And from that, I have been running a lot of tube jigs. And doing like a 2.5-inch brown craw with green sparkle has been my best tube. Also, some standard brown craws, some whites, and then also some different soft plastic grubs from Northland. But a lot of the tubes I am running stinger hooks on just to try and pick up every fish that I can, because it's being a little bit more difficult to get a lot of bites out there. So having that stinger hook to get a light biting fish is a good method for sure.
And so you're actually flipping up into these different areas. So you're looking visually at where the sticks or the trees are and then trying to hit those pockets?
Absolutely. You know, I'm pulling a lot of the smallmouth out from pretty deep in there, actually skipping my tubes up in there and catching a lot of those fish. A few of the big walleyes have come out of the inside of the trees, but then also working on the outside of the trees a little bit too, you know, 2 and 3 feet out from the cottonwoods, getting into some cruising fish and basically bouncing it through. And just depending upon the weed growth in that particular area, you can stay pretty close to the bottom. And it's funny because you wouldn't think that you'd be able to fish a tube right on the bottom on the edge of trees, but that's not normally where this water level is.
Right.
So you're seeing a lot of actual like grass growth and just dirt in those areas where it hasn't had the opportunity to have aquatic vegetation grow yet. So that's where you can just bounce right along the outside of the trees and be fairly weedless.
And the idea, I assume, is that these fish are up there because the bait fish are up there too, trying to hide from them.
Absolutely. All those shad are pushing up in there, along with the panfish, like bluegills and crappies, moving up in there. Those walleyes push right up on the edge of there and really hunt down those bait fish. And, you know, you're up in there, and obviously the crawfish are in there too. We're catching a lot of fish that are spitting up crawfish as we're bringing them up. And that's why the tubes have been really effective. That's been my most effective bait out there, for sure.
Wow. So how long do you think that this pattern is going to go on?
You know, it's tough to say. I have been paying attention to the flows every day. For the last week, it's been pretty even going out from what's coming in. But they have bumped flows to almost 1,900 coming out of the dam right now. And depending upon how this rain comes in, you know, that's about 300, 400 CFS more than what's coming in. So I'm anticipating 2 weeks, maybe even 3 weeks, that it's going to be up high like this.
That's crazy. So this is really an opportunity that we don't get very often. And many times in fishing, you know, you've got to take a situation that seems to be a negative and really use it to your advantage and learn from it, right? And we're in one of those patterns right now that we don't get, unless you're out at Glendo or unless you're at McConaughey on a regular basis. This isn't something that we see in the Denver metro area, for example, very often.
It's giving you a chance to get some pretty nice fish into the summertime here, too.
Yeah, because the water, I assume, is still pretty cold on Chatfield.
Pretty cold, and those big females are on the hunt after the spawn right now.
And when you were saying 30, almost 30 earlier, you're talking 30-inch walleyes.
30 inches, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have the biggest one so far this season, at least in the trees, not the actual springtime season, but I got a 28 the other day.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty nice one for sure.
Oh, that's a nice fish anywhere.
Yeah, it's a really nice fish, and they're up in the trees. I mean, I caught her out from underneath cottonwoods.
No kidding.
And pulling them out, I mean, she was in about 3 feet of water.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they are up shallow, and that's something you don't really think about, to go shallow for walleyes. And, you know, everyone... You know, you really need to concentrate on not getting yourself in a mindset to be narrow-minded and have tunnel vision, because when you think about, you know, you think about Chatfield this time of year usually is very predictable. You go out, you find the humps, pull some lindy rigs, run some slip bobbers, and you catch a lot of fish.
Right.
But that's not happening right now, and you have to really start thinking outside of the box and start going with some different tactics.
And so the guide trip that you had the last day or so, you said it was a little slow, but you still caught, what, 19 fish?
19 fish. So, yeah, it's been a little slow, but, I mean, they're making us work for them, but we're still getting some.
That's awesome. So if somebody wants to get a hold of you and put together a trip and learn this technique while we have this sort of water conditions, how do they get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me is giving me a ring on my cell phone, 303-514-5546, or you can definitely stop in at the shop at Discount Fishing Tackle, which is on the west side of Santa Fe, just south of Evans and north of Dartmouth at 2645.
And the shop is open today?
Open today, open tomorrow. We're open 7 days a week, weekdays from 8 until 7, on Sundays from 8 until 5.
Nice. And so if somebody, is there a particular time that seems to be working during the day? Relating
to
your
early morning bite was good. I mean, yesterday we got out there right at the crack of dawn, right as soon as we could get boats on the water. I wound up picking up two walleye and back-to-back cast, picking up a couple more here and there, and in the middle of the day really made us work for those fish.
Hey, so, yeah, before you go, let's talk about putting your boat into a Chatfield.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with that, with this high water. What seems to be working, and where can you go to actually put your boat in?
Currently, the south boat ramp, which is the one at the marina, is fully closed. It is underwater, as well as the restrooms in that area, so that's all closed off over there. The north boat ramp is the only one that is open at the moment. As of yesterday, there are two boat ramps, the north boat ramp. There's one on the west side, and then there's one a little bit more east. And the east ramp at the north boat ramp is the only one open right now. Now, what's kind of interesting out there is that the water is so high that there is actually a gap between the boat ramp, or excuse me, the boat dock and the actual dry land of the ramp. So bring in a pair of hip boots or rubber boots or something if you don't want to jump to clear that distance is what you're going to need to do. So, and then definitely bring some bumpers on your boat right now, too, particularly if you're pretty concerned about scratching it, because those ramps are so far up out of the water, they're a little scratchy right now.
Got it. All right. And then anything new with regard to putting in the boat with the inspections or anything else that you've seen this spring?
As far as inspections, anyone with an inboard, outboard that does not have a seal, you have to have a mandatory decontamination. So definitely take that in consideration if you're going to be having a inboard, outboard. But as far as outboards go, as long as you are clean and bone dry and free of any kind of vegetation or mud or anything like that, they'll do a quick inspection and send you on your way to get on the lake. And as far as coming off, they're having mandatory inspections on the way out that are open from 6 in the morning until 10 at night. And they are just, once again, inspecting you to make sure that you're free of water and that you're dry, and they will put a little wire seal on the front of your boat, which will then allow you to access any state parks without having to get that first inspection. Or if you want to get out there before they get there to inspect your boat, you can do that as well with a seal only.
Yeah, that was the thing that I noticed at Cherry Creek last week when I was out there. Same thing over there. So that must be something relatively new this year relating to inspecting on the way out.
Yep.
We'll have to get somebody on from DOW to explain why exactly on the way out. There must be something new that they're concerned about.
Yep.
But like you said, when they inspect on the way out, then you get the seal, and then you can go out any time in the morning. You know, I'm not sure what time Chatfield opens, but Cherry Creek normally is 6 a.m., and if you want to be out there.
6 a.m. at Chatfield, too.
Okay, so if you want to get out before then, you've got a seal at least now, and then you get inspected on the way out, and I guess it makes sense. So.
Yep.
Those are all
going a little faster.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, that's fantastic, Austin. I really appreciate it. And, you know, if you're looking for Austin, give him a call. Stop in the shop. The shop obviously has a lot of things to offer in the way of gear this time of year. They've got all of the fly gear and certainly all of the spinning and the other gear that to chase those walleyes and those smallies. Really appreciate you updating us, and we'll see you soon, hopefully to get that four weight back and me back on the river.
Thank you so much for having me today, Kevin.
All right. Thanks, Austin.
All right. Have a good one.
That was Austin Parr from Discount Tackle. It's a great time to take a break at this point. On the other side of the break, we'll be talking with Jason Stewart from West Fork Jason Guide Service out of Hayward, Wisconsin. And you're listening to Sportsman of Colorado.
Tired of going into a gun shop after hearing an ad only to find they have only a few guns and no ammo? Get into the zone, the reloading zone. From handguns to ARs, the reloading zone has it all. Need to get your concealed carry permit? Reloading Zone has a few openings this month. Call now, 303-431-GUNS. That's 303-431-4867. Check out their website, thereloadingzone.com. Get into the zone. The Reloading Zone.
Hi, Dan Johnson, General Manager at Len Lyle Chevrolet. And if you're trying to sell your car or truck, be careful of online advertising. There's lots of scammers and criminals that make their living on the internet. Len Lyle Chevrolet will pay top dollar for your used vehicle in just 15 minutes, and the money is good. On the web at LenLyleChevy.com.
Have you been involved in an auto accident, slip and fall, or any other personal injury? I'm Kevin Flesh with Flesh Law, and I've been protecting victims' rights for over 17 years. If you want aggressive representation that will get you the money you deserve, then call me at 303-884-1037 or visit my website at fleshlaw.com. That's Flesh, F-L-E-S-C-H. I will give you the personal service you deserve, starting with a free consultation. Call me, 303-884-1037 or visit me at fleshlaw.com.
This is Red Merrill for Phoenix Weaponry. Phoenix Weaponry is a weapon manufacturer that services the firearm enthusiast. From precision ARs to suppressors, Phoenix Weaponry can make your dreams come true. Phoenix Weaponry is a full-service gun shop that offers gunsmithing, coating, and modifications to your own weapon. Phoenix Weaponry, family-owned and operated right here in Colorado. If you can dream it, Phoenix Weaponry can build it. Call today, 720-340-2496. Again, that's 720-340-2496. Or visit their website, phoenixweaponry.com. Mention Sportsman of Colorado and receive 10% off your custom-built weapon.
Dana Lash, 8 p.m. weeknights on KLZ 560.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Sportsman of Colorado. This is your host, Kevin Flesch. Really excited about our next guest. We have Jason Stewart from West Fork Jason Guide Service. He's actually in Hayward, Wisconsin, or just outside of Hayward, and fishes several rivers there. And want to welcome you, Jason, first time to the show, but hopefully not the last time.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
So, Jason, talk to me a little bit about sort of what's going on. I know muskie fishing hasn't started yet, but why don't you tell us a little bit about your guide service and what you do, and then what waters you fish and maybe what the fish you fish for.
Yeah, we have our muskie opener a little over a week away. It's going to be not this Saturday, but the following. But apart from the muskies, we've got trout fishing that's been open since the beginning of May, and we actually have an early catch and release season that starts prior to that in the beginning of March. And right now we have smallmouth bass, largemouth bass, walleye, pike that's all open for fishing right now.
And you primarily guide on the rivers using fly equipment, right?
Yeah, correct. I mostly fish the rivers in northern Wisconsin. We've got a lot to choose from. We've got the Namekagon, the St. Croix, the Chippewa, the Flambeau. And, I row a Western-style drift boat. I've got a Clackacraft that most of you folks out in Colorado are used to seeing. And, yep, we're doing a lot of 10 weights, intermediate sink lines, some popper presentations, but mostly it's all big streamers, you know. Bucktail, feathers, flash.
That's awesome. So describe a little bit, like, obviously the folks in Colorado were used to pretty good size rivers. Describe what the rivers are like there, sort of a typical, not a CFS, but what the rivers are like. And I mean, are they similar to the Western-style river that we see out here?
No, we don't quite have the gradient that you guys have out there, so we got a lot more flat water. There are some rapids, but it's more kind of technical boulder garden, slower moving water. But, you know, the scenery is, you know, either a mix of hardwoods, but we do have some pine trees, you know, your balsams and cedar trees. And, you know, the water is tannin stained, though. It's real dark, kind of root beer, coffee-colored, you know, from all the swamps and muskegs that leach the tannins into the water. So our smallmouth bass are almost have a different color. You know, a lot of the clearwater smallies are those green fish. These are almost more dark bronze, almost have a purplish hue to them.
Yeah. Beautiful fish, though. And the water up there is just gorgeous, and the surroundings are unbelievable as well. And when we were out with you about a year and a half ago, we had one of those just spectacular bluebird sky days. So even if, you know, you aren't catching a bunch of fish, and we'll talk about the fishing, but the surroundings are spectacular.
Yeah. In October when the maples are turning, oh, it's just gorgeous. Yeah. I agree.
So let's talk a little bit about right now. The muskie season, you're about a week away. And so what type of guiding are you doing right now? Are the smallies?
It's smallmouth bass, yeah. Early in the season, the walleyes are in the rivers. We had an early spring this year, so everything's kind of a little bit different than last year. Last year, all our lakes were still frozen right now. It was a real late opener. But now we had some warm weather, and it's been a little more up and down. And the bass have come in. They've tried to spawn. I've seen some water temps in the low 70s already a couple weeks ago.
Wow.
And now And we've had a little bit cooler weather system come in, so I think the bass are going to hold off again for a little bit. Hopefully that hasn't messed up their ability to spawn. But I think the next warm spell, they're going to give it one more go, and then we'll be right into kind of summer pattern fishing.
So describe the smallmouth bass fishery. What type of fish, what size fish are you talking about catching on these fly rods?
On average, you're going to see them 14, 15 inches. But during the course of a day, if you're really trying to fish smallmouth, you're going to see one up around 20 inches. That's pretty common. We've got the 4 or 5 pound fish swimming around in the rivers. And I'd say we're really blessed with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then are you fishing mostly with six weights for the smallmouths?
I love them little boogle bug poppers. So I'll be throwing a 5-weight or a 6-weight for poppers. If we're wanting to get down a little deeper with a streamer, just today I was in Duluth. Stopped at my buddy's fly shop, Great Lakes Fly Shop up there, and he ties a crawdad pattern called the mud wrestler, and that's just almost similar to a redfish fly. You know, it's just heavy weighted, gets down, and when those smallies get on the crawdads, it's unbelievable. That's about the only thing they'll eat.
That's got to be spectacular. And on a fly rod, a 5 or 6 weight with a, you know, even a 14-inch fish has got to be what, 1.5, 2.5 pounds?
Correct. Yeah. Yep.
That's a fantastic fighting fish in that size of fly rod.
Yep. Yep.
And so. So you do both topwater and streamers for the smallies, and then once you get into the musky season, what do you see early in the year, I guess, in tactics, and how does it change over the course of the season?
Well, yeah, early season, June, July, I kind of call that, you know, your summer solstice period. I'm fishing about the same size presentation for both bass and musky, you know, kind of a 3.5-inch long streamer, and that's going to be able to pick up both species of fish. They're both going to be attracted to that. Everybody thinks you need to go big for muskies, but these river muskies are more opportunistic feeders. If you put something in front of their face and they're halfway at all hungry, they're going to come and get it.
Yeah.
As opposed to lake fish, where you're throwing big double-bladed, you know, bucktails and 1-pound plastic lures. You don't really have to do that with these river fish. I think a little more subtle presentation, so as it lays out towards the bank, it's not causing too much commotion to spook the little reluctant fish, you know.
But this still isn't really your subtle, you know, dry fly fishing for the muskies. I mean, you're still...
No. Dry fly fishing for muskies for me is a big frog pattern. That's my musky dry fly. I think that's a huge food source for these river fish, the frogs, you know, they're eating everything that's out there, so ducks, you know, yeah.
So what is it that somebody that's, you know, into fly fishing has never tried the musky gear and the whole experience, what really makes you go out and want to guide people for that sort of fishing?
Well, I like getting people on their first fly rod fish. That's a real, real neat experience, and over the years here, I've seen a lot of people catch their first muskie ever with a fly rod, which is just super rewarding. It's a really neat experience. It's a very frustrating fish. You've got to put your time in. Every time you think you have a pattern figured out for these fish when they want to feed, you know, it seems like the next time out, you've just disproved your pattern. So it's a time thing. You got to really, really put the casting in. It's blind casting. I mean, we're using saltwater style gear, 10 weights, 11 weights, big heavy weight forward lines, but it's not, you're not sight fishing. You're just casting the water that you think looks fishy, and you gotta stick with it all day, really.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing that I always enjoy, well, not really enjoy, but the thing that I'm always amazed by when I've caught a few muskies in my life, is I always seem to get cut somehow in the process. And so by the time I'm done releasing that fish, there's blood all over the place, it seems like.
Yeah, they tend to save some of their fight for when you're landing them. That's true.
That's why in the old days they used to shoot them before they brought them into the boat, right?
Yeah, those old days aren't that many years ago either.
Now that's certainly not something that you do. Obviously, it's all catch and release with your guiding.
Absolutely. Yeah, and even when we get into the dog days of summer into August, I have some ethical issues with fishing muskies. When you start seeing water temps pushing 80 degrees, it's time to fish poppers for bass. You gotta let those fish go. Odds are they're probably not gonna feed anyways, but they're struggling. Anytime if you were to catch a fish with that kind of water temperature, letting them go at the surface, there's very little dissolved oxygen there, you're probably gonna have a dead fish by the end of the day. I mean, it may swim away, but you want to definitely 65 degrees, somewhere in there. I'd say that's kind of the fish's optimal water temp, you know, when they're going to fight the most, jump the most.
Right, and that's the other question I was going to have for you. In your experience, obviously as a guide, you want people to come out and use your services throughout the year, but what are the really optimal times that you've got the best shot maybe at getting that fish of a lifetime?
Yeah, my opinion, I like the early season that we're coming into right now, shortly after opener. I think this year's opener, we're going to have a little bit cool water from what I'm seeing right now, but come around the end of June, beginning of July, that's a great time of year. They're done spawning. You know, they've spent a lot of energy, so they've got the feed bag on there. then you kind of come into the doldrums of dog days of summer, and then once we get into fall, it's pure musky fishing. We're not even thinking about bass. It's big, low, slow presentation. You get down deep. Those fish know winter's coming, and they really put the feed bag back on again in the fall, you know, come October. And my favorite time to fish is basically that last little warm-up before everything freezes, and then it's done for the year. It seems like that's a real magical time right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
A brief window, yep.
So how do people get a hold of you if they do want to have a trip with you, or if they just want have some more questions about trying to figure out how to do this with the fly rods?
Yeah, they could check me out on the Internet, Google West Fork Jason, or I have a webpage, westforkjason.com, and that's got all my contact info and information on trips there. So
great. And then is there a phone number that they can reach you at as well?
Yeah, 715-492-1136 would be the best way to get a hold of me.
So where do you think opener for muskie you're going to be fishing this year?
I don't know if I want to say that.
How about just
Northern Wisconsin? How about that?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I go by the name West Fork Jason, and I live on the western branch of the Chippewa River, so there's a good chance I could be fishing right in my front yard. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we're planning on hopefully seeing you sometime in June when I'm out there with the family. We're going to try to spend a day with you, and hopefully we'll report back to all of our listeners. And
yeah, I look forward to spending some mosquito season with you.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time today, Jason, and we will touch base in the next month or so.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Thank you.
Let me tell you why I am so happy that I chose Academy Roofing. They were efficient, on time, and their cleanup was perfect after my roof was completed. As an A-plus member with the Better Business Bureau, Academy Roofing brings the knowledge and experience you need in a roofing contractor. Call now, 303-360-0708, or visit academyroofinginc.com. At Academy Roofing, your roof is our reputation. Academy Roofing is an official registered company of haystackhelp.com.
Are you tired of not having a place to hunt or fish? Or maybe you just don't know where to even start to find your next outdoor adventure? This is Kevin Flesh for Colorado Outdoor Sports. Since 2001, Colorado Outdoor Sports has been providing outdoor opportunities to sportsmen with the benefits that only private land can offer. Colorado Outdoor Sports offers over 40,000 acres of private land. Kids under 16 hunt does and cows for free on club property. Call now, 303-460-0273. That's 303-460-0273. Mention Sportsman of Colorado and receive 50% off the initiation fee. Call now, 303-460-0273, or visit their website. Call now, 303-460-0273, or visit their website, ColoradoOutdoorSports.com.
This is Scott Watley for my friends at Rampart Firearms in Sedalia. This is a great store. Family owned and operated, they buy, sell, trade, and consign firearms. You will find a great selection of new and pre-owned handguns, shotguns, and rifles. If you can't find the gun you want, Rampart Firearms will special order your gun at no extra cost. Found a gun on the internet? Rampart Firearms will do one firearm transfer and the background check for only $10 if you mention Sportsman of Colorado. Rampart Firearms, 720-468-0050. That's 720-468-0050. Located at Highway 66. In Santa Fe in Sedalia. Rampart Firearms opens 7 days a week. 720-468-0050.
The Colorado Conservatives Wake Up Call. Wake up with Randy Corcoran. 5 to 8 weekday mornings on KLZ 560.
Well, I'm just a working man. Welcome back to Sportsman of Colorado. I'm your host, Kevin Flesh. And we have Brian LaRue on the phone from High Country Angler. Brian, how are you?
Hey, doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah. So we have actually never spoken. I think you've been on the show with Scott and Red in the past, but I think I was missing in action on that particular day. So for those folks that don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about what you do for High Country Angler and what's going on with your end of the world.
Well, I've been with High Country Angler for about 6 years. I write the destination story every quarter. I also do marketing and advertising for High Country Angler. I started my love of fly fishing probably when I was about 8, 9 years old. fishing Yellowstone with my family on road trips and moved to the Rockies about 10, 12 years ago. And have never looked back. Love every minute of it and love connecting with people as a writer for the last 16 years.
So tell us a little bit about those folks that don't know about High Country Angler. Tell us about the magazine itself, how often it comes out, and sort of the topics that you guys cover in each edition.
Sure. Yes, we're a regional magazine. We cover mostly Colorado. We expand into Montana, Wyoming, New Mexico, pretty much any of the Rocky Mountain states. As the destinations writer, I will pick some destinations outside of the Rocky Mountain area just to give people ideas of other places to go. So yes, we're regional and quarterly. So every spring, summer, fall, winter, we put out a magazine, which we also put online as an e-zine for free where people can download and read it anytime. The other place to find our magazine would be in the local fly shops where it's actually a free handout as well. And there's always the opportunity of a subscription where you can have it sent right to your house, and I believe we charge about $10 for that.
All right, and so local fly shops, you can go get the magazine. Hopefully they have it in stock if people haven't already taken all of it.
Right.
The second opportunity would be online. So how does someone look to find the magazine online?
Just go to our website. It's www.HCA Magazine, it's just High Country Angler abbreviated,
yep.
HCAMagazine.com, and click on the current issue, and you can page right through the e-zine and see all the pages. The online version actually has about four or five more stories than does the print issue, so there's even more content to read online.
And you say this comes out quarterly, right?
Correct.
So pretty up-to-date information when it comes out about the fishing conditions in different parts of Colorado and throughout the Rocky Mountain region.
Yeah, Landon Mayer is one of the most well-known guides in Colorado. He writes like a how-to. I write the destination story.
Yeah.
And then we have a couple other writers that contribute. One does like a fishing report and a couple others. We also team up with Colorado TU as the official magazine of Colorado TU. We run about 8 pages dedicated to their causes and their current project.
And so Trout Unlimited, if you're a member of Trout Unlimited, you get this magazine as part of your membership to the organization. Is that right?
That is correct.
So that's another good way of getting involved is you can get involved at TU, but you also get this wonderful magazine besides, right?
Right, and you joining TU, you also get the National Trout Magazine, and they're a quarterly as well.
All right, so you do some discussions about traveling and fishing. So where's your next destination that you're getting ready to write about and tell us all about?
I'm probably going to stay home on this one and do Williams Fork for the next issue, but I have plans in the works for a Teton River, and we'll probably throw something exotic in there coming up as well. Sometimes I have all four destinations for the year planned out. Sometimes I shoot from the hip and see where the wind's blowing.
And this last quarter, what did you talk about in the magazine that just came out?
The one that just came out, I did the Firehole River in Yellowstone National Park.
Oh, so tell us about what research you had to do for that particular article.
Well, it helps. I always try to write about something I've either fished or, know quite a bit about, but I actually lived in West Yellowstone for about a year. Yellowstone is by far one of my favorite places. And the fire hole, I chose that one just because Memorial Day weekend is the opener in Yellowstone, and that and the Madison are the two rivers that open. All of them open in Memorial Day except for Yellowstone Lake and the river itself. But Memorial Day, when the general opener happens, they are the two rivers that are fishable and open right at the opening of the gate.
So we were there a few years ago, and I fished the lower section where it comes into the Madison. There's sort of that canyon area. Just beautiful water. I mean, it was spectacular. So what did you talk about in it being a destination for folks? Because what I saw about the river is you've got a bunch of tourists sort of on the upper section, but that lower section, I didn't run into anybody.
Yeah, that lower section, I think about 2 years ago, I fished it in middle to probably about June 10th to June 20th, and it was a great salmon fly hatch down there. I was throwing a Paulson's flutterbug. It's an Umpqua pattern, and catching anywhere from 13 to 17 inch browns down there. And yeah, I had the place to myself, me and my buddy, And it's just a different kind of fishing compared to what you, like you said, on the upper stretch where you see a lot of the fly fishermen lining up out there.
Yeah.
But early in the season, anytime before July, you can sometimes have a mile to yourself. So I would highly suggest an early trip or a fall trip to avoid, you know, the summer tourist crowd.
And does that salmon fly hatch, is that a pretty regular hatch every year, or does it really fluctuate based upon the water?
You can count on it almost every year, but I would say it's definitely a 2 to 3 week window. So if you're there opening day through about June 20th, if you stay a week, you're probably going to see it. If you get there July 1st, it's probably long gone.
Wow. And then, of course, the Madison just below that, there's some great fishing there as well. And that's a much bigger river. At least that was my impression when we were there, as you get closer to the west side of the park.
Yes, it's a beautiful river. I love throwing streamers early in the season. It's one that fishes well July, August. You can throw hoppers in the middle of a windy day. Everybody's scared off by the wind and the heat, but the nice browns in there will rise to a hopper. And then again in like October, you can catch 4 to 5 pound browns, probably catch 3-4 if you spend a week on it.
Yeah.
They come out of Hebgen, and it just gets on fire at that time of the year.
You know, it's so funny. You talk about we talk about the rivers in the West, and we really take them for granted, I think, sometimes. We're talking about some world-class trout water. I was just on the Bighorn a couple of weeks ago, and that's a spectacular fishery as well. Tell me about, what's exotic to you then, the places that you write about that are exotic in the magazine?
You know, I've written about Belize before. I could probably talk about a little bit, you know, fishing like bonefish. I sent a lot of people to like bone fishing in Christmas Island.
Yeah. So,
but New Zealand's got to be up there on our list too. Same with Patagonia.
So New Zealand and Patagonia, have you been down there and done the fishing for the really big rainbows and browns that are available down there?
I haven't. So far, most of my bucket list kind of stuff has been local, you know, U.S., lower 48, Alaska. I've done Cabo. But I would have to say some of my favorite spots and trips would be like Black Canyon of the Gunnison, taking a drift for multiple days down there, or even jumping on a horse and riding up the Lamar River in Yellowstone for 5 days.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the Black Canyon is one of those resources, again, in Colorado that we forget about, that you guys cover. That's a spectacular. It's one of those things that if you're a fly fisherman, it's one of those trips that you can do if you're a resident of Colorado fairly easily, and it's easy to get there. You know, it's generally, I would suggest you do it guided because it's much more difficult to do it on your own, but you can do it on your own as well if you wanted to.
Yeah, the East Portal. If I ever told somebody to go down there and fish the Gunnison just by themselves, I would send them down that steep winding road at East Portal and tell them after or before runoff and, you know, have a lot of fun.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate your time today, Brian. It's been a joy to get to know you a little bit better and also hear more about High Country Angler. So everybody that's out there that's listening, remember you can pick this. It is a free magazine unless you want to get it delivered to your home. You can pick it up at any fly shop, look online, and we look forward to talking to you again. Thanks, Brian.
All right, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about today a little bit just to get everybody up to date is went out, I was fishing this week and remembered that our actual licenses end the end of March, so you got to make sure that you get an updated license if you haven't done so already, and got the update for 2015 for the Colorado fishing regulations. And there's a couple of things of interest that I think everybody needs to be aware of. And first of all, that... Number one, I didn't realize there were Arctic char in Dillon Reservoir, but there are. And with that fishing resource, they've changed the limits relating to that. And they're trying to do that, it sounds like, to get more fish in Dillon Reservoir. If many of you have fished Dillon Reservoir before, it can be tough fishing. Actually, the fishing is fine. It's the catching that's a little bit more difficult. At any rate, so the Arctic char, the limits have now been changed so that any fish under 20 inches must be returned. If you catch a fish over 20 inches, it's one fish per day for possession limit. So I wanted to remind everybody of that. And same thing with Grand Lake. The possession limits for lake trout is four. Only one of those can be over 36 inches. So if you get that trophy of a lifetime and you want to keep it, Remember, that fish over 36 inches is probably 30 years old. So if there's a way that you can take a picture of it and get a taxidermist to do it off of an artificial fish, that's the best way of handling it. But if you want to keep that fish, anything over 36 inches, you can only keep one of those. If you're lucky enough to catch a couple in one day, make sure you throw one back. And then all lake trout between 26 and 36 inches must be returned immediately. And so, again, they're trying to get that sort of class fish in there because that's really the fish that are going to make that resource even better in the spawning. And then lastly, Rifle Gap Reservoir. I'm not sure how many folks in the metro area get up to Rifle Gap. But if you do, the possession limit on yellow perch is now 20 per day. And so you want to make sure that you watch all of those limits. And I always recommend whenever you get your fishing license for the year, pick up the pamphlet that comes with that and look through it. Make sure that you're up to date on all of these things. You know, an example that we had earlier talking to Austin Parr relating to the boat inspections. The first time this year when I got to Cherry Creek Reservoir and the guy was then waving me when I was coming off of the boat ramp after fishing and he wanted to inspect the boat, I was a little put off by, well, you've already inspected it once today. Why do you need to do it twice? That's one of the regulations that's changed this year. And so, you know, again, you want to make sure that you follow the law. So when you get off those boat ramps, make sure that you get checked, especially in the metro area relating to the reservoirs, and get those things. You can get your boat then sealed so when you come back, you don't have to get checked out as rigorously. And with all of that, I think it's really important for folks to pick up those regulations, take a look at them, and make sure that you're familiar once you get on the water. If we're going to get some stable weather here, and the fishing's only going to get better. So do what you can to make sure you're up to date with your licensing and all the rules. Well, at this point, I think we should probably take a break. You're listening to Sportsman of Colorado. My name is Kevin Flesch, and I'm your host.
If you're looking for a place you're always welcome, let me recommend Kiowa Creek Sporting Club. Hi, this is Scott Watley. Just 20 miles east of Denver, Kiowa Creek has it all. A professionally designed sporting clays course, archery range, and year-round dog training fields. Be sure and leave time to relax in the spacious clubhouse. For all Kiowa Creek Sporting Club has to offer, call 303-644-4627 or check out their website, kiowacreek.com. Mention Sportsman of Colorado, and with your one-year membership purchase, you'll receive 100 free sporting clays. Call 303-644-4627. That's 303-644-4627. Kiowa Creek Sporting Club is an official sponsor of Sportsman of Colorado.
If you want to save money on a new Chevrolet, you're making a big mistake if you don't shop Lynn Lyle Chevrolet. We have the lowest prices and the highest trade-in values. This month, we are offering 15% off most new Chevrolets. Lynn Lyle Chevrolet, I-225 in East Colfax, or on the web at LynnLyleChevy.com. Chevy, find new roads.
Hi, this is Scott Watley for my friends at One Shot Gear in Englewood. If you are a hunter, you know that after a full year of training, shooting, and planning, when the season rolls around, you are lucky to get one shot at a trophy. At One Shot Gear, they've got you covered with the largest selection of premium hunting gear in Colorado, like Blosser Rifles, Sitka Gear, and Night Force Optics. The One Shot Gear team has the experience, so they can help you find exactly what you need for the hunt of a lifetime. When only the best will do, choose One Shot Gear, located at 4720 South Santa Fe Circle in Englewood. One Shot Gear is your premium hunting gear headquarters. Call 303-284-3828. That's 303-284-3828. If Sitka makes it, One Shot Gear has it. They're the largest stocking dealer in Colorado. Ask for Grant. Tell him Sportsman of Colorado sent you. Mention Sportsman of Colorado and today only receive 10% off of all clothing and boots. One Shot Gear is an official sponsor of Sportsman of Colorado.
Have you been involved in an auto accident, slip and fall, or any other personal injury? I'm Kevin Flesch with Flesch Law, and I've been protecting victims' rights for over 17 years. If you want aggressive representation that will get you the money you deserve, then call me at 303-884-1037 or visit my website at fleshlaw.com. That's Flesch, F-L-E-S-C-H. I will give you the personal service you deserve, starting with a free consultation. Call me, 303-884-1037, or visit me at fleshlaw.com.
Freedom 560. Ken Clark. Weekday afternoons at 1 o'clock on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Sportsman of Colorado. My name is Kevin Flesch. I'm your host today. We have had a variety of topics of fishing and Division of Wildlife rules and regulations. Wanted to remind everybody to go to our website. There's a bragging gallery that's there, and we put up, you send us some pictures and some text relating to your biggest catch or something that you've harvested throughout Colorado. We'll put it up on the website so that you can reminisce about the positive things. I think, Addie, you're actually in the bragging gallery relating to a big smallmouth bass that you caught a few years ago. So it's a really cool resource. It's fun to see all the different folks that have put things in there, and we're always looking for more. So if you can get on the internet, go to sportsmanofcolorado.com, go to the bragging gallery, and you can add some additional things to us. In addition, we have the ability to answer your questions, or if you have a topic that you want us to talk about on the air, or you want us to research relating to certain issues regarding hunting or fishing in Colorado, we're always interested in doing that, so you can always email us on the website as well. And as I explained earlier, if you're interested to hear what Scott and Red are doing in Africa and different crazy things that they're shooting over there, certainly take a look at our Facebook page. Scott's been updating that pretty much on a daily basis, and it's amazing what technology can do. I was texting and emailing him last Thursday night as we were at a band concert for Kendall. I think, no, it was Addie, you were playing. And he was sending me pictures, and I was responding to him as we were sitting in a gymnasium, and he's in Africa, so pretty amazing. All right, so we on a regular basis talk about getting kids out and getting them involved in the hunting and fishing and camping throughout Colorado and the western states. And I have two experts in studio today, Kendall Flesh, Addie Flesh, available to give not only my perspective on getting your kids out and doing stuff with them, but also their perspective on why they think it's fun and enjoyable. And hopefully they will do that throughout their life, because hopefully we've started it and it's a positive experience for them. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about camping today in the last few minutes that we have. And you've both been camping a lot, right?
Yes.
How often do you think we've camped over the years?
A lot.
When you say a lot, why do you say it that way?
Because we have our own trailer.
Yeah.
And so we often go camping during the summer.
Absolutely. And what is your favorite place to go in Colorado camping?
My favorite one personally is a spot in the Rocky Mountain National Park.
And why do you like that so much?
I liked it because in this one specific campground, there was like this giant rock, and it was really fun to like climb on.
And were there things that happened at this campsite too? Did we have any wildlife come in or anything else that you thought was pretty neat?
One afternoon, we had a jar of dill pickles out on the picnic table, and I think we were coming back from a hike, and we saw a giant deer, like, about to eat a pickle, and it was just, like, around the campsite.
So, we've been to Rocky Mountain National Park on several occasions, and it is a really cool resource, really close to town. I mean, within a couple hours' drive, so it's not too bad for you to drive up there, right?
Right.
And then staying in the park, there's lots to do. I mean, what other things have we done there that you've enjoyed doing?
Well, as I said, there's lots of hiking.
Yes.
And they have a great, like, ranger program. And so they have a bunch of, like, educational talks and exciting, like, shows and to help you learn about nature.
Yeah. And you've seen all kinds of wildlife, haven't you?
Yes.
And Addie, how about you? What has been your favorite sort of camping experience that you've had so far?
My favorite camping experience was probably when we went backpacking. I loved it because, like, it was really good exercise, and it was really fun because the whole family was there. And you got to be in nature. And then we went in this open meadow area, and we slept overnight there, and it was really beautiful.
Now, we've actually got a family story from that trip, right? We had a little run-in with a moose.
Right.
Right? And can you tell us the story of how this happened?
So, we were eating dinner, and well, actually, we had, once we hiked into the campsite, we saw a big moose, but it was pretty far away. And so, like, we started, like, kind of getting scared, but we were like, oh, it's just going to go over in the forest. We're not going to see it. Like, that's pretty cool. And then we were eating dinner, and our golden doodle scout, he went into the bush.
Okay, and then, so we learned something from this experience, right, that we'll get to after you finish the story.
Yes. So he went into the bush, like, just like, he was like, oh, he can just go over there and play. And when he came out trailing, like, on his tail was a moose, like a big, big moose. And so we all start freaking out. And so then my dad's like, okay, just get behind a tree, get behind a tree. So, like, my older sister, Mackenzie, Kendall, my mom and I all run behind this big tree. And then my scout, like, my dog goes, like, running off. And so then my dad was trying to, like, spook it so it could leave, but he wouldn't leave. And so he was like, hey, buddy, go, go. And the moose, like, would not leave. And it was really big. And, like, we were all freaking out behind the tree.
Well, it probably actually wasn't that big, but we're like 4'11"-ish.
Yeah.
And so it seemed huge.
Right.
Yeah, Kendall was freaking out.
So how close was this moose to me, your dad?
To you, it was like 3 feet, like a yard, like a yard and a half, maybe.
It was pretty close. I think it was probably about 6 or 8 yards, but it seemed really close. I would agree with you.
Yeah.
And you guys were behind a big blue spruce.
Yep.
And Kendall, of course, you had learned when we were up in Yellowstone, we just talked to Brian LaRue about being up in Yellowstone because we did a trip up there, that the moose up there, they always say they're like the most dangerous animal in the park.
Yeah, and they can like kill people.
Right. So you were very concerned about that.
Very concerned.
Yes. And so, Addie, what happened next?
So what happened was, like, we were all behind the tree. We were, like, freaking out. Like, Kendall was crying. Like, everyone was so scared. And so my dad was trying to spook the moose, but it, like, would not leave. So then finally my dad takes off his ball cap and, like, throws it at the moose. And thankfully, like, the moose didn't, like, charge at him. The moose got scared, and he ran back off in the bush. But then he, like, stayed there for a while when we were still eating dinner, and Kendall was like, no, I'm not going to eat dinner. It's still there. And we could see it even, like, there was, like, the bush that it was in was, like, pretty tall.
Right, but like willows.
Yeah, but we could still see its back and it laying down, and, like, it stayed there till, like, we went to sleep.
Yeah, so I think the interesting thing about this whole experience with the moose is, of course, number one, if you do have a dog, you should keep it on the leash so it doesn't go into the willows, right? That's one of the things we learned. The second thing that we learned is that I think in this particular situation, you guys were much more concerned about the moose than the moose was really concerned about us, because he really didn't leave.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
He just stood there.
Right. And you, of course, Kendall, you were very concerned that he was going to just wait it out.
I thought we were going to all die.
And the third thing we learned was that you should always wear a ball cap.
That's right. There you go.
For safety's sake.
Exactly. Right. So you don't need a handgun or bear spray.
No.
You just need a good ball cap.
And I also liked that camping experience because we hiked up like half a mile more to this lake, and we got like jugs of water, and then we cleaned it with, what was the mineral?
They're like tablets.
Right, the little tablets, yep.
Yeah.
The iodine tablets.
Yeah, and then it took a while for the iodine to, like, set in. So while we were waiting, my older sister, Mackenzie, she found this little pool with, like, lizards in it. So then we went over there, and we were trying to, like, catch some, and I think we actually caught one.
Yeah, she caught one, and
but then we released it.
The big salamanders.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Salamanders.
And so, and that was the trip that you enjoyed the most.
Yes.
Very nice. So, what are things that you think people that are listening to the show should think about when taking their kids camping? What are the important things to remember?
I think before you go on the trip, you should acknowledge their fears and assure them that there won't be any of those, like, animals. And if there will be, they'll, like, tell them they know exactly what to do if they come, and, like, all this information, so that maybe they won't be as scared and you'll be more prepared.
So the real question for you, Kendall, is, do you think that you'll go backpacking again?
No. No, I do not.
How about you, Addie?
I think another thing, like, as Kendall said, you should be prepared. So, like, if it's, like, your first time camping with maybe, like, your toddler, you should always be prepared and, like, know what to do in case of emergencies. And you should know, like, what animals there might be you might encounter, and know how to handle that in situations.
Or, for example, if your toddler falls into a big bush of cactuses.
Oh,
That's also happened.
Yes.
Yes.
That you should know how to get cactus quills out of the child while they're screaming like crazy, right?
Yes,
Addie?
You should always have first aid.
The wolves were howling.
Yes, the coyotes were howling.
Yes.
This was another trip that we took Addie.
In the sand dunes. And so what had happened is I came out of our trailer and I wanted to talk to Kendall and my older sister Mackenzie. And so I asked my parents where they were, and they're like, oh, they're over there trying to catch a bunny. So I was like, oh, that seems fun. I bet I could catch it. So I start sprinting as fast as I can over to them, trying to see if I can spot the bunny and catch it. And I'm just looking at Kendall and Mackenzie, and I'm just running towards them really fast. And I was like in preschool, so it seemed really fast to me. And then I tripped and fell into a humongous cactus-like bush, and I don't really remember what it felt like, but it really hurt. And so
I remember being about 50 yards away from you at the time, and you started screaming like crazy. I thought a coyote was attacking you.
We're making it sound like we're having all these bad experiences, but really we've only had like two bad experiences.
Yeah, we're actually pretty decent campers. But from those two experiences, we have a lot of other stories like that.
Yes.
But from those two main experiences, we've learned a lot. Like, if you're catching a bunny, you should look at the ground when you're running.
That's awfully specific.
And like with the moose, we should know if like he had thrown his ball cap and it had charged him, what we should do in that situation. Not like that was pretty lucky, but we should know what to do in that situation.
That's true. Well, those are great examples and great example of why you get your kids out into the wilderness, so that you've gone camping with other kids now for Girl Scouts and that sort of thing, and they had never been camping before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that experience was just, you helped then other kids learn how to be good campers and to be safe and all of those other things, right?
Yes.
Well, fantastic. Well, thanks for being here today. I appreciate you regaling us with a couple of stories, and a couple of stories that I'll always remember as a parent in the camping experience and what you can do with your kids in so many of the opportunities that we have here in Colorado. So make sure today, plan a trip with your kids so that they get to see what Colorado offers. And you've been listening to Sportsman of Colorado. I really appreciate Kendall and Addie for being here. And for all of our guests today, Brian LaRue, Austin Parr, Jason Stewart. This has been Sportsman of Colorado. Get out there and have a good time.
And opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.